This is the Athletic Football Show's Prospects to Pros.
Hello and welcome to Prospects to Pros. I am your host, Nate Tice. And doesn't matter who the host has been on the show, there's been one mainstay of the show, and that right now is my co-host, Dane Brugler. I'm so excited to get to the show, and how are you doing today, Dane?
I'm doing well. This is going to be fun, you know, since May, really. I mean, after the last draft, I've gotten tweets almost daily asking, okay, when's Prospects to Pros coming back? You know, when Andy Staples, when he left, oh, so what happens to Prospects to Pros? And well, here we are every Wednesday between now and the draft. This is going to be awesome. This is actually season 4 of Prospects to Pros. You know, last year with Staples, and we've seen the show grow every year, but this is like Saul Goodman becoming a part of the cast midway through Breaking Bad. It's like, oh, okay, we're making a good show even better, and that's what we're doing with you on board here as we talk all things NFL draft. So, I mean, you and I have a lot of conversations about these prospects offline, so, I mean, it makes sense. Let's just hit the record button and, you know, share what we're hearing, what our thoughts are on all these guys, and share it with the world.
That's exactly it. We've really focused on the pros section too, which I think will be a lot of fun too. That's why it's all encompassing. Yeah. So you get kind of my weird brain thrown in here. Just wait until we hit like October and November, and I start referring to some random scheme that, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers are running, and maybe that's a fit for some receiver I'm watching or something like that. But I'm really, once this idea kind of got thrown to me about like us getting together and doing the show, I was like, oh, yeah. Wasn't much of pushback. It was like, yeah, let's do that. That works. Anyone that's watched our draft shows the last couple of years, that's been a highlight of my entire calendar. I mean, the draft is anyways, but it's been fun doing it with you, because not only respect everything that you put into this and think you're the best of the best, but also just kind of geeking out. I think we had a question one time, me and you were talking about like draft memories, and me and you were talking about, oh, well, Saturday and Sundays, it was the best. Oh, yeah. Like you woke up first thing in the morning, you watched it all day, and Robert's staring at us like we have 12 heads. Like, he's like, yes. Yeah, I was like, I was at some restaurant probably in high school. Right. I was getting some Chicago pizza spot. But no, I if anyone knows in the intro, I wanted to rip the band-aid off and get into it, because I think this show is going to be great. Right now, we're going to focus on the 2024 QBs. It's a really fun class, not only just the top couple guys, but also just a lot of interesting other prospects that might rise, some might fall, and some might come out of nowhere, and some might just stay the same. That's how I felt last year's class was. It was, oh, we don't know who will rise, and I think my rankings stayed pretty much verbatim or the exact same throughout the whole process. Maybe Anthony Richardson rose up at the end there. But no, I think this is going to be a great class. I'm really excited to dive into it. I'll also kind of just get some housekeeping in order. We're going to talk about other positions next week from this 2024 class. And then after that, we're going to do a little bit of a focus on maybe some second-year players and some rookies, some superlatives. And we have some other ideas that we're going to drop in here over the next couple of weeks before the season starts. And then once the season starts, we're rolling. We're going week to week, talk about different prospects, talk about rookies that are happening in the NFL and other, you know, young players in the NFL, and talk about their journey there. So let's just get this thing going. I think anybody that's focused on maybe college football and the draft process, they always hear, what is the magic words? I think you started in your article, well, next year's quarterback class is even better. And Dane, would you say that maybe for once that this one is true, or would you say, you know, there's a couple names, or maybe that it's not, that saying kind of gets thrown out the window when regards to maybe Caleb Williams and Drake May?
Right. I don't think we're going to need that phrase this year. I mean, it was especially true 2 years ago when we had a historically below average quarterback class, one quarterback drafted in the first 73 picks. That was Kenny Pickett. But even last year when, you know, we really liked Bryce Young and CJ Stroud and Anthony Richardson and these guys, all eyes were still on Caleb Williams and Drake May. Well, here we are. Now they are, after the season, they will be draft eligible. And talking towards next year's class, there's a lot of excitement. And not only those two guys at the top, but a couple other intriguing underclassmen, which we'll get to. And then a really, really deep senior class. I mean, I'll just kind of put this out there now. Do you know what the record is for the most quarterbacks drafted in a 7-round draft?
Oh, no. 14,
You're close. It's 17. Yeah. When the draft moved from 12 rounds to 7 rounds in like 94. It's like
92. 94.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, since then, so we're talking 30 years. It was that 04 class, which had Eli Manning, Rivers, Roethlisberger at the top. But then, you know, day three was, or to your point, earlier point, day two was full of those mid to late round quarterbacks, the Jim Sorgis of the world. But
you know, don't forget JP Losman in there, right? Yeah. Wasn't he QB4 in that class?
He was, yeah. but this year, it's going to be interesting because last year we had 14 quarterbacks drafted.
Yeah.
This year, I have no doubt we're going to finish with upwards of 20 quarterbacks with draftable grades. Now, it's just a matter of will there be enough teams willing to use a draft pick on those guys. But this is a class that has a chance to – and the underclassmen, that'll determine a lot too, who comes out, who goes back for their senior year. But the potential of this quarterback class is a chance to see a lot of these guys off the board. It'll be really interesting. But, you know, to your point, it all starts with those first two quarterbacks at the top.
Yeah, I mean, even you do such a great job with kind of your primer, I guess, articles in the summer for each position. And one of my favorite reads of the summer, because it's not just a, let's have a breakdown of Marvin Harrison Jr. and that's it. It's like actually, you know, depending on the position you're talking about, you get into the weeds of some, maybe some guys that even new to a guy like me, who's a full-on nerd with some stuff, or others that are kind of draft nicks going into all this stuff. And I mean, your senior list, like kind of your watch list, I guess, is what 25 guys? And that's just your seniors, I'm including the underclassmen. And when putting together kind of I my Google Doc, and I was kind of writing out my big board to start out in May and just who I'm going to start watching throughout the summer, I felt like the quarterbacks just kept going on and on and on. And I was like, oh, yeah, that guy. Oh, yeah, this guy transferred. He might be interesting. Oh, yeah, this guy, I liked him last year. You know, Tyler Van Dyke from Miami, who was a guy on my short list last year, is like an afterthought going into this year. We might talk about him later. But just that's like a perfect instance, perfect example for me anyways of going – this guy was on the short list last year and is now in the honorable mentions.
And you mentioned transfers. Of my top 20 seniors, 17 transferred at least once.
Wow.
Some of them multiple times. The only ones, I think, of the top 20 that did not transfer were Michael Pratt at Tulane, KJ Jefferson, Arkansas, and Grayson McCall, Coastal Carolina, but he was even in the transfer portal, just decided to go back to Coastal. So it's a different world at the position. And with this year, you have a lot of sixth-year guys because of the COVID year. So it's just kind of a perfect storm of all of this that's going to make this a very deep quarterback class, but also intriguing at the top when we have some of these underclassmen that warrant first-round discussion.
Yeah, let's talk about one of those underclassmen that also transferred. So it kind of knocks out both talking points right then and there. And that's Caleb Williams from USC. And I think from USC. And I think anyone that has any inkling of football knowledge is aware of Caleb Williams. Won the Heisman last year and also just was on everybody's radar, I think, right away from some huge national performances, some trick shot throws that he was going in there. I also think it's nice for me because I've really trained my brain to not focus maybe on guys that aren't draft eligible. Mm-hmm. And a guy like Caleb Williams and even the guy we're about to talk about too, Drake May, they kind of made you watch him because you're watching the receivers that they're throwing to, and those guys are draft eligible. And you're like, man, did you see that throw? Yeah. And you're like, I'm taking videos and screenshots of the quarterback. And I'm like, and all of a sudden I would go through 20 plays. I'm like, oh shoot, I got to watch Jordan Addison. Totally forgot that that's who I'm supposed to be studying right now. But when you watch Caleb Williams, and I know you kind of put a 1A, 1B on these two, on Drake May and Caleb Williams. But when you watch Caleb Williams right now, like as a prospect, what gets you excited about him? I know there's been some hyperbole, but like just look through the scouting lens, or what makes it so highly – makes him so highly graded for you and probably other evaluators that watch him?
Yeah, I think the list is long of reasons why Caleb gets you excited about what he's going to be at the next level. I think the number one thing for me is the poised playmaking. There were numerous plays on last year's tape where I'm just laughing out loud because of the absurdity of what he's doing. First, the awareness and vision are rare. It allows him to negotiate the rush, create with his legs. He's shorter than ideal, but he's well-built. He's strong. And that helps him shrug off tacklers and break those tackles. You think about him standing next to Anthony Richardson. There's a huge size difference here, but Williams had only three fewer forced missed tackles last year than Richardson, which says a lot about his elusiveness. So that first part of the equation, the vision, the awareness, the second part is the arm talent. I mean, you mentioned it, some of these trick shots that he's making out there. There'll be some obvious comparisons to Bryce Young as a prospect last year because of the feel, the ability to create. But where Williams has a clear advantage over last year's number one overall pick is the power in his arm. He has a knack for staying balanced and maintaining his base regardless of the platform, and he can fire these accurate lasers all over the field. And that is where we start to hear the Pat Mahomes comps, you know, really come in. And, you know, like, is it unfair to compare a college prospect to the best player in the NFL, one of the best quarterbacks in NFL history? Of course. But stylistically, you think about how Mahomes plays and you can understand why we're going to hear that conversation or that that comparison over and over the next 8 months. So playing quarterback is all about having answers to the different problems a defense presents. And Caleb, he's got such a unique skill set that he consistently finds answers to all those problems that defenses try to throw at you.
I love the missed tackle stat because when you watch him as a thrower and a runner, it's balance. Yeah. And not only just it's balance in a way like, okay, it's contact balance, you know, through the guys, through the tacklers, the defenders and arm tackles and everything. He's bouncing off guys, spinning, always getting north. It's remarkable, really. But also just what you're saying, throwing off platform and the fact that he's not balanced in a way because he's not throwing it on a balance like right. where he's perfectly set, but he can still get that torque in those throws. I said the only way I can compare is like throwing style. He's like a dart thrower. Like, and usually when people say dart throwers, it's about accuracy, and he is accurate. But just if you're picturing, no, it's what, maybe if you're seeing this on YouTube right now, you can see me, my little visual here. But when a guy throws a dart, it's just from the elbow upwards, you know, elbow to the fingertips. And that's the fact that he can create so much torque just with that. And so much zip on the ball while throwing off balance. It is remarkable. That is what gets me excited personally watching him. I think he checks all the boxes. Like, he doesn't have that maybe overwhelming arm strength or anything like that, but it checks the box. Like, it's plenty. It's NFL good.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like, oh, flashes of good. There'll be a guy I'll talk about later, but it's like, nope, he makes that benchmark where you don't even have to worry about it. You know, so that's what's really cool. It's that package of being a true thrower of the football, a true passer, while kind of getting there sometimes from the pocket, but also just the creating, contorting. And if you watch any NFL quarterback, any of these top guys, that's what you need. It's throwing off balance and throwing from tight pockets and changing to that arm angle. And he's already doing it over and over again in huge moments too. It's not like he's just doing it against some FCS school early in the year. He's doing it in the Pac-12, well, RIP Pac-12, but the Pac-12 championship game or just like these big moments in the fourth quarter. And it's like, that's what you want to see. If you're going to give a guy a big grade, that's kind of, these are the boxes you want to check for a guy that has a big grade. Right. And having said all that, all these positives, unless you have any more that you want to throw in there.
No, I was going to say, throw on the Utah games, both Utah games, throw on the Notre Dame game, you know, like the teams that have players on the defense that at least have a shot at the next level. And he's still making these plays. And I think that will maybe, as we talk about where he needs to improve, that kind of, you know, cause there are some ways, you know, initially when I was watching him, I jotted down some notes where he's too willing to make throws in reverse or without completely settling his feet. And, you know, as I'm writing these notes down as potential negatives, tape after tape, I'm realizing, okay, you know what? It's working for him. So it's not something
it's not a detriment.
Like, it's not something where I need to see him improve this because it works. No. And that goes back to lessons learned with a guy like Pat Mahomes, who for me personally is going to go down as one of my biggest misses as a prospect. His backyard style of playing football at Texas Tech was often reckless, and it just created so many.
It was obnoxious at times.
Yeah, oh yeah, it just created it really questions. It, you know, can this translate? Can he do this against NFL competition?
Yeah,
and it just felt like a big, you know, this big chasm he would have to leap to get there. But obviously, you know, he's able to do it and do it at a high level. That taught me about having more of an open mind, especially for special players. And I think Caleb qualifies. And I'm not throwing out that S word, that special word, willy-nilly. This is something that I really believe after watching him is he belongs in that special category. And when it works for you and it's not creating more problems, you embrace it. You go with it because it is creating problems for the defense. And so initially what was a negative for me really turned out to be a positive for him.
I'm 100% with you. I used to be Mr. I wanted all my quarterback prospects to look like Jared Goff.
Right.
Like I wanted them to sit in the pocket, throw intermediate, and just knife defenses up. And there was a line, I want to say it was Jordan Palmer that said, and Robert Mays will say this, this line a couple times was, I think Jordan Palmer said it was like, Jared Goff is the last quarterback to look like that, that'll go number one overall. Like that, his play style. Mm. And it's like, but that was kind of, it was just the idea of that. And that's, I used to be the same way. I was like, oh, they're too much creation and everything. And that kind of Mahomes comparison has gotten thrown around the last couple of years. You know, Zach Wilson was getting it a bunch. And I understand the trick shot aspect. And there's that kind of down-to-down stuff. And this is why I kind of pound over the table about Mahomes as an NFL player is the boring stuff that he does well. Then that's what makes him Mahomes is that high floor now on top of all the crazy stuff that he can do. Williams does that, mm-hmm. which that's why I'm never going to compare anyone to Mahomes. It's just like such an anomaly. But with the idea that people are trying to get across, I totally get it. It's that kind of trick shot element is it's easier to wean that down and get that out of guys as opposed to making a guy be more aggressive and make them like, hey, come on, can you just try to throw it over the middle or try to throw this off balance? Or are you just going to always check it down left and right? And like, that's one thing I've really come around for. I'd much rather have the wild horse type than the guy that's maybe a little too perfect with everything. But if we are talking about negatives or weaknesses or room for improvement, are there any other ones that maybe you have kind of earmarked or something that you just want to see on this next year, you know, coming off the Heisman season, like what other growth that maybe he can check to make you feel even better about Williams?
Yeah, I mean, I think my main issue with Caleb was something that I think he can improve on this year, and that's just progression timing. I think a lot of times he is guilty of relying on his legs a little too much, that creativity that we love about him, that controlled chaos, it's self-induced a lot of times because of, you know, the timing from read to read is inconsistent. He's more than willing to invite that pressure into the pocket. Last year, only two FBS quarterbacks saw more defensive pressures than Williams. Part of that was the offensive line wasn't very good. It was average at best. Another part of it was his tendency to hold the ball, linger on reads too long. So you love the creativity, the talent that bails him out time after time, but you also want to see fewer hits on his body. You want to see him take the layup if it's there. It's not always about hitting the home run, especially on first down. So I think all the things that or a lot of the things that we like about him, some of that he can reel back a little bit. And I think a lot of that comes with maturation, with experience. And maybe this is also where we talk about Lincoln Riley's offense, right? I mean, there's no doubt.
Oh, don't you worry. I was going to bring it up.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that he'll be dinged throughout the process.
Yeah.
There's no doubt Caleb benefits from the scheme, right? I mean, there's a lot of RPOs, counters, swing screens, slants, Y cross. So
I call them money plays. Yeah, there's a lot of money plays.
Right. And Riley, I mean, he's one of the most well-prepared offensive coaches I've ever scouted. And you rarely see him caught off guard by what the defense is doing. So I think the melding of Riley's offensive brain and Caleb's poised playmaking, and you've got fireworks. So now, and I don't think either entity here is reliant on the other to be successful, and I think that's important. But I think, and I think that's how NFL teams are going to see it too. Mm-hmm. But does Riley, his offense, does it make things easier on a quarterback? Yes, there's no doubt about that. But I don't think that's necessarily a reason to doubt what Caleb can do on his own or even in a different scheme in the NFL.
That is always the question is the can't or won't. Right. Is it because he can't do it, or is it they just won't let him do it, or just, you know, all those questions. And that's I was going to bring up for my kind of things I want to see this year. And that's being in the Lincoln Riley, what I say the money play offense is kind of, you know, that's part of what I want to see improve. I want to see maybe that you already brought it up, but that ability to progress in the pocket just consistently. I see flashes of Caleb Williams in the pocket moving, and it's like, okay, that's good. At least you're doing it. And then he'll bail. And then a couple plays later, then he'll bail quickly. And I'm like, ah, you had a guy coming over, Caleb. Like, just wait that extra half second in there. But it's not always where it's like a big red alert for me, like where I've seen other guys a couple years ago, Malik Willis. Every time I watched him, these guys couldn't be any further apart.
Right.
But Malik Willis, I'm watching him, it was like any type of pressure, he was gone.
Right.
And that is a huge – because it only gets tougher in the NFL. So I agree with you that – that's some things I want to see clean up, is the ability to kind of just hang in the pocket. But again, that might be a can or won't thing with that offense. And that's the thing is, I also want to say is, I'm glad you brought up that maybe, you know, not taking those hits and being the big game hunter at sometimes. Do you think that what he's listed right now is what, 6'1", 215?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think what his measurements might actually be at? Do you think he gets to the 6'1 mark, or is it more of a 6'0", 5'8"? 208 type situation with him?
Yeah, I don't have any type of verified measurements on him, so I'm okay. Interested to find out exactly what he is, especially come draft time. I mean,
yeah,
Bryce Young was a buck 88 for most of the season at Alabama, and he shows up at the combine at 204, and it's like, oh, okay, he's gonna be a 200-pound quarterback now.
Yeah. And pass on the pro day weigh-in.
Yeah, right. And I bet you won't get him on a scale right now in training Ever camp again. In Carolina. And that's fine. You know what? It is what it is.
Yeah.
Probably he's going to be a hair under 6'1", right around, probably in between, but 215, 220, probably, I'd say, okay, 218, combine, something like that. I mean,
that's almost big. That's like a bigger deal to me than the height is the weight, because the height doesn't knock him at all. He sees over the middle and he throws over the middle. So I'm not like, that's why I'm not too worried about it, but it's the weight that I am kind of curious about.
And I think the one other thing we need to mention too with Caleb is this upcoming season, no more Jordan Addison. He was a first-round pick. So, you know, you lose a big talent there. But the wide receiver depth chart there is still pretty deep. I mean, there's a lot of guys. They added Dorian Singer, a transfer from Arizona. He's a smaller receiver, but he's got big-time ball skills. So I don't think the talent drop-off on offense is going to be anything that should necessarily hurt him this year, which maybe could be something that hurts the next guy we're going to talk about.
Right. Let's jump right in. Yeah. I do want to say one last thing with Caleb Williams too, is that he's used to that Lincoln Riley offense. The rest of his teammates weren't. They didn't transfer from Oklahoma. So I do think that the rest of his teammates are going to get a little bump up as they get comfortable in that kind of unique offense he runs.
That's a good point.
I loved your segue there, and that'll be the 1B of this conversation. Might be my 1A.
Spoilers.
My 1A.
There, okay.
It is my 1A. But I don't want to steal any thunder yet. But that is Drake May from North Carolina. Let's talk about why is Drake May? Caleb Williams has got a lot of hoopla around him. Won the Heisman. He is getting put on pyramids as like already the fifth best NFL quarterback right now, and he's not even in the NFL right now. So what about the guy that Drake May is now being considered the 1B, and I think a lot of people are shocked that anyone could even be in the same tier as Caleb Williams. So when you're watching him as an evaluator, what is there to like about Drake May from North Carolina?
Now, and there are some really smart quarterback minds in the NFL who think May is the top quarterback prospect this year. So trust me, you're not alone.
That makes me feel a lot better, by the way.
it's a real thing.
Okay.
I mean, I personally give the edge to Caleb just for everything we just talked about. But May is, man, he's fun to watch. And a lot of what you want at a quarterback, like that prototypical skill set, he has. You want size? Check. Arm strength? Check. Mobility? Check. I mean, you just keep going down the list, and you end up with a lot of check marks. So that release is clean. It's explosive, especially on those three-step drops. Downfield touches there. I like that his tape has almost the full inventory of throws that you want to see in terms of translating to the next level. I don't think he gets enough credit for how agile he is, especially in the pocket. He's really, really smart. I mean, last year was his first year as a starter, and you could see him make some big boy reads, on the leverage of the safety, based on the coverage shells. I don't think he's quite on Justin Herbert's level, but if you liked Herbert as a prospect, I mean, there's no reason why you won't like May.
Boy, do I have a quarterback for you.
So why is he your 1A? What is it that gives him a little bit of the edge over Caleb?
Like everything you just kind of hinted at, he checks a lot of those boxes, the size. And I do think I think he might even be a better athlete than Caleb Williams, which is kind of shocking. I think he's extremely explosive. You see him eating ground as a runner, and he's got good vision as a runner, which is kind of surprising for like a quarterback at that size. And he's like setting up blocks and stuff. And it's like, oh, that's cool. Everything you mentioned, I think he has, I would say, good with flashes of very good arm strength. I don't know if I would give him a 7, you know, on the old grading scale, but he's close to it. Yeah. I did learn one thing. It was like you round down with those grades, so that way it makes it special when you do give a guy like a very good grade. But he has flashes of that. What you said about pushing the ball downfield is what I love. He makes those big boy throws. He throws with touch and layers it. Like, so he has every type of throw in his arsenal, and it's not theory. Where it's like, oh, he has a big arm, but he never completes one. It's like, no, he's completing intermediate throws where he gets over the linebacker. He's pushing it down the field on a go ball. I think watching him in the red zone is so much fun because of some of the throws, the high lows that he makes, and that quick twitch and such a big frame. I love his pocket movement already. He's tough as all get out. Once we talk about the negatives, I'll get into that as well. But this guy, the offensive line was garbage last year, and he is making throw after throw after throw. And what you're saying is it's good to hear about maybe the IQ stuff checking, because that's what it looks like on film, is his ability kind of he progresses and it's quick, and it's kind of that, it's not the exaggerated 1 to 2 to 3, it's you can see him glance and come off stuff and get to 2 and 3, which is very encouraging for a guy with not a lot of starts. So there is just, he checks everything I like. I'm always going to be a sucker for size and athleticism skill sets, but the guy has the kind of intangibles that I like as far as toughness, accuracy, and also just the intelligence from the pocket. But my one stat I had with him was he was the fourth most pressure quarterback. This is from SIS, Sports Info Solutions. Fourth most pressure quarterback among FBS quarterbacks with 200 more pass attempts. And he had the same rate of catchable passes as Bryce Young while pushing the ball further. And he had the same boom bust rate that SIS has as Bryce Young, like literally the exact same numbers, all like 0.1%. So he's throwing like Bryce Young, but he's bigger, probably faster. And like, you know, so it's a very, very intriguing package that just, it makes me very excited. But when you watch him, what are some negatives that maybe crop up for you? I know there's one that is my big one. I've seen him get better at it, but I want to hear that maybe anything else that you've seen.
For me, I think the one main area I'm going to be focusing on with May this year is just the lower body mechanics. When his throws are off target, you can usually point to his footwork as being the culprit. And we talked about this with Caleb, how it doesn't always have to be perfect in terms of his base. You know, he finds a way to stay balanced with his throws and his accuracy, whether he's in the pocket or he's changing an arm angle outside the pocket. His accuracy is pretty much the same. There's not any big change. With May, I think with his footwork, that's where, and he has athletic feet, like you mentioned. He has quiet feet, but sometimes he relies on his upper half a little too much. Yeah. Relies on that arm.
His feet get lazy.
When you have an arm like that, you know, it's hard to blame him, but sometimes you need to reset the base to use your hips, square, drive. I wouldn't call this a major problem. I think it's something that needs to be cleaned up, something that as he gets another year under his belt in college, something that he'll get better at, but something that I'll be looking for this year.
Yeah. That for me was, especially late in the year, they went through a little skid. Was I mentioned that the North Carolina offensive line wasn't great. Mm-hmm. Is sometimes he would make a bad play worse, and he would bail backwards in the pocket, which is kind of, that's in the NFL, that's a no-no. You like cannot do that. And already seeing it in college a little bit, and I give him some benefit of the doubt. It was more when it was like really they had a couple bad drives in a row. The defense gave up a couple touchdowns, so he's trying to make something happen, and he starts bailing backwards, and then the defenders just hook around and get him, and it's a 12-yard sack as opposed to maybe, okay, getting back to the line of scrimmage or getting rid of the ball. I think that is very extremely fixable, but it is something that I want to see improvement on, is because there'll be times where he's taking 2-on-1 drive and the drive's dead after they just move the ball down because he's just taking a bad sack.
Right.
I wouldn't say he's loose with the ball or anything like that. It's just more taking too many yards on the sacks is the number one thing. And that to me is okay, my guard just got beat 10 times in a row. I'm not stepping up. Yeah. I'm not taking another shot to the chin. They're playing Georgia State. I watched Georgia State, North Carolina film, and Georgia State is destroying their offensive line. And I was like, that's Georgia State. That's nothing. And then that was early in the year, and they kind of got a little better. And at the tail end of the year, they kind of faded again. So that's one thing I really do want to see. I'm glad you brought up the footwork too. I do see it sometimes where he like default, he like tries to trick shot things without needing to, because and that's why I say the lazy feet. Yeah. He just goes, oh, I'm just going to flick it with my arm. And it's like, ah, just, you have space in the pocket. Get your feet around and just, you know, take that extra half second. So I agree with that point as well. So talked about these. Sorry.
Real quick too. We mentioned no Jordan Addison. Okay. No Josh Downs.
Yes.
I think it was 117, 116 targets last
year.
New
offense coordinator.
Yeah, exactly. That's going to be a big change. Phil Longo now up in Madison with your Badgers.
Which is shocking crazy. Some people, yeah, by the way. Seeing a modern offense in Madison, Wisconsin is kind of throwing some people off right now.
And it's kind of like Phil Longo, who has a history of productive offenses, but I wouldn't necessarily call him or his offenses complicated or, you know, like necessarily the best offense.
It's all about one-on-ones.
Prepare quarterbacks for the next level, right? Yep. So I'm eager to see what May's going to look like with this new offense, which it's under Chip Lindsey, who, you know, longtime college offensive coordinator. It should be a little more balanced, maybe a little more refined. So that'll be interesting to see how that works out. The receiver to watch, I think, is going to be DeVontez Walker, transfer from Kent State. Someone's going to catch all these passes. Walker is a name to keep an eye on, a chance to really blow up as this season goes on.
That's good to know. I love when you see a quarterback transition to a new offense, because then maybe see a different types of throws and how he handles it. And that's what turned me on to May. At first, when I watched him on TV throughout the year, it was like, you know, on that offense, you're just chucking up go balls, and then you got Downs on a win route on the middle, and it's like, okay, that's not doesn't take a lot. And I appreciated him more on film, because then you got to see his eyes and see him actually come off throws, and that's where I was like, oh, okay, you're not just a gamed up quarterback that we talked about other guys. So
the other two things that I mentioned with these two guys, neither one of us have actually spent days with them to fully understand them as people, but what I've been told from people that have is they both have that FU energy, that awesome, that competitiveness, that you need from your quarterback if you're gonna play at the high level, and you're gonna lead, especially if what they're asked to do. That's something that made Bryce Young the number one pick last year.
I was just gonna say that.
Yeah, that quiet confidence about him. Yep. He was ready with the intangibles. You know, I think Caleb a lot was made last year with the nail polish and what he put on the nail polish and things like that, but as long as everyone in that locker room is looking up to you as the guy that's going to go out and lead us to battle, that's all that matters. And do you know who protected his blind side in high school?
No, I didn't.
Mr. Guy we'll be talking about next week, Olu Fashanu.
In Maryland, that's right.
Yeah, so who will be one of the first players drafted this year, offensive tackle at Penn State. I mean, he has nothing but positive things to say about Caleb and just the way he carries himself, the person that he is, the player that he is, the leader that he is. So, you know, it's something that we'll learn more and more throughout the process. Just these guys as people and their intangibles, things like that. But the early feedback from scouts and people that have been spent time around them has been, you know, nothing but positive about both these guys.
It's such an important point. Especially when you're taking these guys, you know, potentially top five, top 10, these guys are the franchise. They're anointed. They have to be the hardest worker. And so it's good to hear that. I figured May, with his kind of his athletic family, you know, I feel like he had some competitiveness to him, probably got beaten up by his brothers a little bit. And then with Williams, it's, for me, it's weird, you know, having painted fingernails, they're like, weird isn't bad. If you're a hard worker and you're like a baller and you're tough, guys don't care. Like they just see you. They know you're scoring points for them. They are going to love that. So it's all about, hey, once you get to the pros, are you professional and carrying this team? They'll be all for it.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
How do you stack these two up, Caleb Williams and Drake May, compared to other quarterbacks that you've studied? Like recent history or even further along, if you like. It could be the last 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. I know you've been watching the draft since you were in the womb. So so since then, it could be, you don't have to say generational or anything like that, but just a kind of a frame of reference that maybe the tier that these two guys are in.
Yeah, and I think this is – right now the grades are incomplete, right? I mean, we still have a full season to evaluate, but
yes.
– so I mean, I've been doing this professionally for 15 years. The highest grade for a quarterback that I ever gave out was Andrew Luck. And then the second highest grade I ever gave out for quarterback was Joe Burrow. Third was Trevor Lawrence. So I think Williams has a chance to be somewhere in that top three, maybe knocking Lawrence out of there. Whether it's one, two, or three, we'll have to see. Based on how the season plays out and the more evaluation we do of the player. But just based off of watching six or seven tapes this summer, he has that type of potential, that type of ability to get into that top three for me. Obviously this is something we'll revisit maybe mid-season, then at the end of the season. Yeah. But I mean, it says a lot that we're even talking about it right now. And that's, I mean, who knows? I mean, I'm not going to put anything in stone right now. Maybe May could even pass him for me. Maybe I join you in thinking May is the top guy this year. But I'm interested to hear your perspective on this, because sometimes we can get, you know, so caught up in the moment that, oh, this is the best. He's a franchise guy, generational guy, you know, that those words get thrown out so easily. But for you, based off quarterback prospects that you've seen, you've studied, where does he fall in line for you?
I've been officially doing this where I'm actually watching and studying guys since the 2014 draft. Okay. But I got to watch Luck a little bit because we played some teams when I was in college. We played against that played against Stanford. So college Luck is in my brain. But I would say officially studying, Trevor is my number one. You know, but if I included Luck was the best I've ever seen. But I'd say officially it's Trevor. And then I kind of have like a half gap, and then it's like Burrow is two, and then it's like it's May Williams right after that. Yeah. So I put it as in the last decade as like my official line here is that these two are both in the top five, any way you shake it, which is, I mean, it's, yeah. I mean, you look at some of these past classes, guys that went 1-2, Goff and Wentz went 1-2. Yeah. And it's like these guys as prospects to me, or I know that's hindsight's everything, but even as prospects, these guys are easily a full tier better than when I watch those guys.
Mariota.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting when you include last year's class, because we,
yeah.
I mean, the top three guys that were drafted last year, all in the top five, I think both of us really liked those guys, but they're just not quite on the same level as we like these two.
Yeah. I put it as, and kind of just my own brain, it's nothing official like that in a scouting system or anything, but like a top 10 grade is like, okay, that's a true blue top 10 grade. That's like as high as I can really give everyone. Like Trevor, I gave like basically, yeah, he's number one pick. That's like the highest I can go. It's like both of these guys are easy top 10 picks to me. It's not squinting. There's no inflation because they're a quarterback. While I would say Stroud, Young, and even Richardson, who I was really high on, I had like lottery pick grades on, which is basically, oh, I'm comfortable taking them in the top 20. Mm-hmm. Half round inflation becomes the top 10, yada, yada. But that's kind of how I differentiate it, because it's like, no, these two, Burrow, Trevor, and I'd have to maybe think, I can't think of the fifth right off the top of my head. Those are like really the only guys I've given true blue top 10 grades to. So it's that kind of just sets it right there, like how highly I view both of these guys. Even if I prefer May a little bit, I still think Williams is just fantastic as well. That's why it's going to be so much fun. This is not like a one of us going like, wow, really? Like a hot take here. It's like these two are fantastic. But okay, we got these two out of the way. So as of right now, it's August 9th when this episode is going to come out. Who is your QB3 going into? We were just starting training camp for colleges, starting fall camp. But right now, who is your QB3?
So in my quarterback preview, which I appreciate you mentioning earlier, going position by position, we're on linebackers coming out tomorrow. So we're almost done. But quarterbacks, almost a month now, came out. And at the time, J.J. McCarthy was my quarterback three. This is going to be a fluid conversation throughout the season. You know, theoretically, McCarthy has everything you want in a quarterback, the tools, the intangibles. Now it's just a matter of consistency, putting the offense in times where he has to put them on his shoulders, he can do that. Carry the offense if needed. It gets a little complicated with this Michigan offense because they're going to rely on the run game. That's going to be the focus of what they do. That's what Jim Harbaugh wants to be. And it's tough to blame them considering they have one of the best running back duos in the country. Blake Corum is awesome. Line. Yeah, exactly. The offensive line is outstanding, especially in the run game. So, you know, at some point, I mean, you have to look at it and say, okay, Jim Harbaugh, he doesn't need to rely on McCarthy to win him games. But he also has to realize he has a revving Ferrari at quarterback that, you know, people want to see you unleash this guy. So, I mean, when we saw it a little bit against Ohio State, we saw a little bit, the Purdue game. All three of his touchdown passes on the Purdue tape were awesome. TCU was a little bit of a mixed bag. He had the two pick sixes, but he also had a lot of positive things on that tape as well. So with McCarthy, I'm really excited for what he could continue to grow into, develop into. It's just I'm a little cautious about, are we going to be able to see that? It also factor in Michigan's non-conference schedule this year is not good. It's terrible. The Big Ten, I mean, there are some really good defenses in the Big Ten. I think, you know, the Penn State game, Ohio State game are going to be fun. Yep. But outside of that, I don't know. I mean, Illinois lost quite a bit, but they still have some guys returning. I just don't know if we're going to be able to see enough where Michigan's going to be in position where they need the quarterback to bail them out. So I think there's and this is assuming he comes out after this year, we might still be in a position where we're still trying to learn who J.J. McCarthy is. And that's not ideal for a quarterback you're potentially thinking about taking in the first round. So as of right now in August, I'm going to say J.J. McCarthy, but I think this is where, you know, that first tier is the first two guys. The second tier is just you've got a group of really intriguing underclassmen who any one of them would not surprise me if they ended up as that quarterback three and maybe even pushed to be considered in that, that top tier. I don't think they'll get there, but at least be considered. But I mean, who is your, where we sit right now, who is your quarterback three? I think I know, ACC quarterback.
It's an ACC quarterback. Yeah, okay. I'm very excited for a Tobacco Road matchup this year because I have Riley Leonard from Duke as my
kid. This is my quarterback four. So I'm right there with you.
I was glad to see that he was a guy that I noticed on TV last year and then was like, okay, I'm going to watch the offense tackle anyways. And then I ended up watching Riley Leonard the entire time. I'll talk about real quick. I'm going to go with McCarthy real quick, my notes on him. He was my QB4 when we last talked. I maybe cooled on him and maybe moved him to five. Another guy bumped for me. Everything you're talking about. It's that he misses, like, he'll have only like a couple throws that I'm like, that I want to see, maybe like a sail route, which is like a deep corner route, but he throws like once every two games because they don't need to throw that ball. And if he misses it, and it's one of those, it's like, I don't want to ding him because it's like, I only see him throw it once. And if he misses it, it's like, okay, he's 0-for-1 on that. When another guy throws it maybe 15 times and I get to see those reps, it was kind of like Richardson a little bit last year where he finished the game with 16 pass attempts. And so you really have to extrapolate everything you're seeing and trying to squint and everything and maybe see, okay, how's the footwork look? Okay. How's his eyes look and look at all the intangibles. So I'm with you. I just need to see more tape of him, but that's the thing. It's Michigan's offense. So it's like, I still might be wanting more by the time December hits, but he is a good athlete and there are some flash throws that I really like. But Riley Leonard, though, from Duke is, first and foremost, I love his accuracy. That guy puts the ball on the money time and time again, off platform, on the move, short and intermediate. I will say the Duke offense, and I texted you this, kind of infuriates me because they throw so much quick game. And it's just like, oh, after a while, it's like, push the ball down. I'm tired of us seeing these stick routes and these crossing routes. So let me see some. And so when you do see some red zone throws, you highlighted this clip too. And I think I tweeted it like as I was watching him it was a little double move that he throws a little slug, a little slant and go route. And seeing him quickly reset and throw that ball.
Perfect placement.
Yeah. Perfect placement. And that's the type of throws that he does over and over and over. It's not an accident. And on top of it, he's got good height. He's got longish frame. He's still probably, he looks like he's like 210-ish, but looks like he can grow a little bit into that frame, which makes me excited. And he's a good athlete. This dude can run. Yeah. Like legit take it to the house when he's running. He's an awkward runner.
Probably 4 or 5 speed, right?
That's what it looks like. Yeah. He's built weird. Like, I don't know. It doesn't look fast, and you see him run, and all of a sudden he's just going for 20 yards.
Right.
He's taking it to the house.
So this spring, he was 6'3 and 5/8, 211 pounds. So right where you're saying, where he has the frame. It's just he doesn't necessarily have maybe the weight you want to see yet, but I think he could put it on.
It's kind of like how Stroud was, like Stroud in 2021. It's like, okay, you're a little skinny. It looked like he put on maybe like 7 pounds, you know, 8 pounds, and because he has those longer arms, same and big hands. Mm-hmm. So I think the same thing with Leonard. He can get to that 220, and I think he'll be good there. It's not the end all be all because he is a good athlete. Just like him in the pocket, he's balanced too. Sometimes, once in a while, we'll try and make a little too much happen, but he has a great clock in his head. He's been coached very well, getting the ball out, and his eyes are really good. I have a true first-round grade on him right now, which is shocking. Going into the process, I didn't think I would. I thought it was just going to be the top two guys and then maybe a little gap. I think his arm strength is more above average-ish with flashes of good. So I will say that's when I was referring to that earlier. This is the guy I'm talking about. But he wins with accuracy and timing, and he can throw off platform. He's a good athlete. He's got a little Johnny Knoxville to him where he's running the ball. He'll helicopter into the end zone. He's not scared to take a hit. He's a competitor. So I'm very excited to watch Leonard this year. He was really grew on me as I watched him. I ended up just like keep bumping him up. Every game I watch, I'm watching 5 games on him. And I just really like his kind of all package as a player. And I think he still has room to grow.
You think about what Duke was 2 years ago. I mean, they were a dumpster fire. I mean, they had 3 wins on the season. You know, bring in Mike Elko as head coach, kind of an afterthought when you think about Duke football. They won 9 games last year. And Leonard as the quarterback, first year as a starter, he was a big reason why. He had 33 total touchdowns. I mean, he was third in the ACC in total offense. I mean, what he was able to do with maybe some a supporting cast that there's not a ton of NFL players out there on that Duke offense. There's a couple, but not a ton.
Yeah.
But look, this is a guy that really I noticed when I was watching ACC defensive players last year, and then when I put on the film, kind of like you said, it just this guy's pretty good. I mean, he might not have an elite arm. None of his physical traits are elite, but he is good enough across the board. He's accurate. Yeah. He's efficient. He seems to have an instinctive feel for what he's doing. He doesn't, for lack of a better term, piss his pants when, you know, the rush comes in. He knows what to do. He has an escape at all times. And so, yeah, I can't wait to watch more of him. In the opening weekend, Duke has a very talented Clemson defense. So that's going to be a lot of fun to see right off the bat, you know, what type of next step does he take? Because I'm with you. I think he's right there in that second tier behind the first two as, you know, could be a first round player, could be a guy that, you know, teams give starting grades to. He's a fun player to talk about.
Yeah, I probably have, to kind of put it in context, probably the same grade on him as I have or had on Will Levis last year.
Okay.
Where it's kind of that borderline fringe, like late first round, early second, half grade inflation might bump up. Will Levis went to the second, so which is funny enough. But I'm saying that I think there could be a bump up even further from that. Levis kind of stagnated, as we all know, but I think that's where I'm at, kind of the same kind of spot with him. Kind of, really like to watch him. I think his name is kind of starting to, you know, get a little noise behind it. I want people to watch Duke this year because they have a fun offensive lineman as well. So it's an interesting team. They're really well coached. But all right, we've mentioned 4 guys now. Who else? You highlighted, I believe, 6 in your article, but I would say who kind of rounds out your top 5
or any other close honorable mentions? Well, I want to hear who passed McCarthy for you as that quarterback 4. Who is that?
I couldn't believe it. It was Quinn Ewers.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm great to the flash with him. Yeah, and that's kind of, I think that's not shocking anyone. That's his whole game. It's just great to the flash. Mm-hmm. He's a little frustrating for me. those guys, him and McCarthy, I gave kind of late second, early third kind of grades to, but like arrows pointing up. I want to see more out of them. So that's how my top 5 goes. So it'd be May, Williams, Leonard, May, Williams, easy top 10 grades.
Yeah.
Leonard kind of the late first grade, then Ewers McCarthy kind of that late second grade, but with arrows pointing up. But then, I mean, there's another crop of guys that I would consider in that tier as Ewers and McCarthy. So that's why I kind of want to hear who else you have up there as well. So maybe I can crib some of your notes as well. Some of the guys I might have to keep an eye on that might be like honorable mention, maybe top five, top six, or even top seven if you want to throw that out there.
Yeah, well, Ewers was my quarterback five. But I agree with what you're saying. Like, he could easily end up being quarterback three. I mean, that he's ready to take the jump. I mean, we have to factor in the flashes we saw last year, which was really his freshman season. I mean, we have to remember, he reclassified to basically skip his senior year of high school, goes to Ohio State, where he, you know, sat the bench behind C.J. Stroud, unsurprisingly, decides to transfer, goes to Texas last year, and you saw the flashes basically as a freshman out there. Yeah. So he's going to be a sophomore this year. Technically,
he's only 20 sophomore. Still.
Right, he's young. This will be his first. He just finished his first full offseason in Austin. Yeah. When you have Steve Sarkisian, this is kind of maybe the opposite of J.J. McCarthy, where they're going to let Quinn Ewers throw it around. You look at the supporting cast that he has: Xavier Worthy, deep threat. He's kind of
four or five receivers that are.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Xavier Worthy. Think Hollywood Brown. You know, those types of vibes. Yeah. Jordan Whittington's probably the most consistent ball catcher of the group. He's a potential draft pick on day three. They bring in A.D. Mitchell from Georgia, size speed freak. I like Isaiah Nair, who's another guy that could be drafted. And then I know you like Kasey Kahne. And so they are deep at receiver. And that's not even including Jatavion Sanders.
I was going to say tight end.
Yeah, one of the best tight end prospects in the country. He's going to see a healthy share of targets this year. So you factor in that. You factor in the offensive line is strong. Now it's up to Ewers to take that next step. He has an awesome arm. He can change his arm angles. He can anticipate. It's just a matter of feel. Something that we saw from Caleb, we saw from Drake May last year, but we have not seen it from Quinn on a consistent basis yet, where he understands where to find all of those solutions to the problem that the defense throws at him. So will we see more of that this year? I can't wait to find out. Going to Tuscaloosa early in the year to face Alabama, that'll be a lot of fun. So that was my quarterback five. Quarterback six for me was Bo Nix, Oregon quarterback. Could have came out and would have been a day two draft pick, decided to go back to school, Auburn transfer, but didn't look anything like the Auburn quarterback we saw.
No, he did not.
I mean,
he was off my radar completely. I had committed. I'm like, I'm never have to study this guy. And it's like, oh, I do have to study him. Huh? He's actually not bad.
That's it. Yeah. I mean, he was accurate, especially over the middle of the field. I mean, he was really consistent, sliding, climbing the pocket. Did a nice job down the field with touch. Yeah, I mean, his post routes are awesome. One of the best post route thrower in this class. So, you know, if you had asked me right now who's the top senior quarterback, I think it's pretty clearly Bo Nix out of Oregon. We'll see what he does now for in year two in that offense. Loses his offensive coordinator. Dillingham, he went to Arizona State, take the head coaching job there. But I mean, Bo Nix, I think, has all the talent there at Oregon to continue developing and kind of putting his claim to why he should be a first round pick. I don't know if he'll get there where he's going to be thought of as a guy you have to take in the top 32, but he could establish himself as a top 50 guy. No doubt. He has that type of ability with a strong season here.
He was a guy I was like, really, I have to watch Bo Nix. Okay, I'll watch him. And I watched three games of him, and he grows on you. He has some real gamer to him while making some hero throws that I didn't even know that he had it in his bag. Like, I was like, where was that for the last couple of years at Auburn? And sometimes you just got to get to a fresh start, and also with a system that maybe is a little more conducive to it. Maybe just have, like, showing off his talent, like throwing stuff underneath. He was a guy that kind of I warmed up to. And with Ewers, you watch some of the flashes. He can be frustrating. His footwork can be frustrating, but it's like, again, he just needs more live bullets. He just needs more reps. Like a lot of these guys, he's a baby. All these guys are babies. Right. Not Nix, obviously, but all these other guys that we're talking about. And so that's what the year is. Also, Paul Christ is there, which he's an offensive analyst there now too. So I'm curious what some Sark and Christ magic happened in Texas right now. I'm very curious to watch that offense now that I know my old mentor is there. But it's Ewers and everything. And with Nix, I I have no idea what to think of him. I have that. He's in that same tier for me as yours, McCarthy, where it's just like, okay, I'm putting a second round grade on you with an arrow. I don't know. It might stagnate right there, but I feel like he deserves at least a chance in this league, like as in some sort of role. And that's right now as we sit here in August, and I want to see him go into this next year. So any other quarterbacks? Oh, sorry.
I think a lot of listeners are going to roll their eyes at this, but NFL teams and scouts really care about have you overcome adversity in your career in some shape or form. And with Bo Nix, you think about, he was a legacy at Auburn. He, you know, flashed enough as a freshman where you thought, okay, this guy is going to be something. But then his sophomore year wasn't good. Junior year wasn't good. He was going the wrong way. He was declining. And part of that was the Auburn program was it going that direction with or without him. So he goes to Oregon, even with all of that on his resume. And, you know, he had the confidence to step in there, win the starting job, be the guy, and, you know, win over that locker room, win over that coaching staff. So overcoming everything that happened at Auburn to reinvent himself as a prospect, that matters in a big way to NFL teams and scouts who want to see these guys, you know, face some of that adversity so they know what they're made of, what the makeup is. So I know that it's kind of cliche with a lot of when we talk about quarterback prospects, but NFL teams care about it. So, you know, that's worth talking about.
And it matters too, because a lot of these guys, like say he stayed at Auburn, he's the legacy guy, and there's an ML, you know, just a book on him, good or bad, from those guys. So you go into a fresh spot and seeing how guys act when they're humbled, which is a very real thing in the NFL, because it's just a lot of these guys for the first time usually have to, that like some guy coming from, I'll just say like an Ohio State or an Alabama that just wins game after game, or Georgia recently, they just win game after game after game after game. They have to face maybe two tough matchups at the end of the year. Now, I don't want to knock like SEC ball or anything, but this is just a point I'm trying to make here, people. Right. But you just, they don't ever have to face it maybe outside of 2 weeks, and it's with people that they've hung out with, that they got recruited with coaches that love them and all that stuff. So you don't really know what actually how they actually act when they face some of these, you know, a lot of these guys never had to face six losses in a row. Now some of these guys didn't have to get all their coaches get fired after 9 months after they get drafted. You know, that's, some of these guys never have to go through that. So that's a very, very important point to make. I'll kind of give you like another honorable mention thing here. Any other QBs outside the ones that we've talked about? Any just to keep an eye on, or any others that have note? Any that you've been, or your favorite watches, maybe outside the top couple of guys? I'll combine a couple questions here, Dane. But any other kind of honorable mentions that you want to throw in here? Just, you know, fun watches, or just some guy that you're like, hey, you know, there's some noise about this guy. We'll see. We'll just, you know, maybe it's a TBD at this point in time.
Yeah, definitely some TBDs in this class, I think. One name we're going to hear a lot about is Joe Milton at Tennessee.
Yeah.
6'5", 240 pounds, huge arm. I mean, good bet he'll have the strongest arm in the draft. We've already heard the Anthony Richardson comparisons because of those physical traits. But Milton doesn't have nearly the same type of speed or creativity as a runner. I don't think he has the same feel as Richardson showed in a small sample size. And, I mean, we have to remember, Richardson was a third-year sophomore, so he was, you know, really a first-year starter, where with Milton, this is his sixth year in college. So, you know, I think right now he is in that mid-round conversation, but some around the league are optimistic he can climb even higher. So Joe Milton, definitely a name to keep an eye on.
He's an offense that'll make him look good.
That's it. Exactly. That's part of the equation here is with that hypeable offense at Tennessee. We saw what it did for Hendon Hooker. If Milton can be even 75% of what Hendon Hooker was at Tennessee, so not quite maybe a Heisman guy like Hooker was before his injury, but if he could be 75% of that, that's going to give some NFL team the optimism that he still has room to develop, room to grow, and Milton will be a top 100 pick easy if he is 75% Hendon Hooker this year. Now, can he be that? I don't know. He's playing in the SEC. That'll be – I already got that Georgia game circled on the calendar. That's going to be a lot of fun to see how he does up against the number one team in the nation. I want to see Devin Leary at Kentucky. We just talked about Bo Nix and what he was able to do after he transferred. Now, Devin Leary at NC State going to Kentucky. He'll be playing under Liam Cohen, who had a little sabbatical in the NFL. kind of to the detriment of Will Levis in his final year. But what can Leary gain from that? He got a strong arm. The last 3 years at NC State, I think you saw the flashes, but he struggled to really put together a full game. But you see why teams are optimistic about him.
Some accuracy stuff. That was kind of,
It's consistency for him. But he can set up quickly. He can, you know, especially over the middle of the field, I think he works well. I think outside the numbers, that's where his accuracy falters a little bit. Spencer Rattler, I mean, it wasn't too long ago. We couldn't find a mock draft, an early mock draft without him in the top 10, right?
Right.
The star has fallen off, but kind of reinvented himself a little bit last year at South Carolina. So what does he look like this year? Does he continue to take another step forward? Some of the issues with him are intangible related in terms of just the way he carries himself. How is that going to play out throughout the process? But Spencer Rattler has a lot of talent, and that's something that NFL teams – They don't shy away from rolling the dice on talent at this position. So what can he do this year to help himself? Those are guys that I think are – those three will be in the prime conversation of the senior class. Other guys that I just enjoyed watching, Jordan Travis at Florida State. He's a dual threat guy who –
that was a great tout by you. He was a lot of fun to
watch. Florida State is going to be a fun team this year, right?
I mean, they are.
Yeah, they've got guys on offense like Keon Coleman and Johnny Wilson at receiver. Benson, the running back, is awesome. The best tackle breaker in college football. On defense, Jared Verse would have been a top 20 guy if he came out. But he has a chance to be the first senior drafted this year. So Florida State is appointment viewing this year for if you're looking for NFL prospects. And then Michael Pratt at Tulane. I thought it was a easy guy to watch and appreciate what he does. He's on time. He's accurate. He's a functional quarterback. And sometimes that's all you need at the next level is just be a functional quarterback.
A lot of guys have made a long living just being a functional QB. And I totally agree with you with Travis. I really enjoyed watching him. Had more IQ to him than maybe I thought. We see that type of quarterback year in, year out in college football. The runaround guy that's 6'1", 200 pounds, pretty good athlete, pretty good arm, but their eyes are everywhere. His eyes are good. He's aggressive as all get out. That's what I loved. That guy is a big game hunter. He's trying to throw corner shot, hole shots. He's trying to throw over the middle. It's a lot of fun. He's just a very fun football player. I said he's a Heinicke type where he might be running around and, again, another Johnny Knoxville type. Mm-hmm. Just a fun player. I really like him. I'm going to have a limit of how high I can grade him, but he's a guy that I think can maybe just stick as a runaround guy in the NFL. But I had Joe Milton as well as a guy I'm keeping an eye on. I'm also just as far as transfers, and this guy – when he first started at Clemson, I was like, oh, wow, well, here's another guy. Here's another five-star, and that's DJ Uiagalelei. Yeah. I always butcher his name, but that's close enough.
That was pretty good. I was going to give you credit.
I thought that was pretty good. Yeah. I know it sounds like ukulele, so that's how that's how I get to it. But his shine, talk about the shine coming off and going in that Clemson offense that is kind of fallen by the wayside, and when you don't have a Deshaun Watson or Trevor Lawrence as your QB, kind of – it's a tough offense to operate when you don't have a dude making throw after throw. So I want to see him at Oregon State. I love the coaching staff at Oregon State on both sides of the ball. I think that they'll get the most out of him. And I think he's a perfect guy to be in an under center play action type offense. He's a classic big arm dude. So I have an eye on him. I have no, like, I barely have a draftable grade on him off of what he's shown at Clemson. He got benched for a freshman. So, and Cade Klubnik, who I actually do like.
Yeah.
But that is just that's someone I want to keep an eye on. I'm glad he brought up Rattler because, just like you said, the arm talent, that guy has a throw a game that is just S tier rare. But it's just, you know, the in between stuff. The second half of last year was really encouraging, though. Yeah. But as we talked about the other guys, the Caleb Williams of the world and Drake Mays of the world, and talked about their intangibles and their makeup, that's what he has to prove more than anything. Yeah. How was he when he came in at South Carolina? And I would say
That he went back to school, I thought that was a step in the right direction, right? You know, like he didn't bolt. He, you know, had a little bit of success down the stretch.
And when they faced adversity in games, he didn't fade.
Yeah.
That was always his thing. Once they went down two scores, he just started gunning, throwing everywhere. Mm-hmm. And he actually made the team better, which was really cool to see. Sorry to cut you off.
No. He looked himself in the mirror and said, hey, I can get better. I'm going to go back to school and I'm going to get another year under my belt and get better. And I – maybe that was a little bit of, you know, that self-awareness that he seemed to lack as a recruit and then in his early years. Yes. And that's what you want to see. So that I'm just, you know, that's not adversity. The, you know, we not to write the book on him or anything, but hopefully that's a step in the right direction.
I totally agree. And the last guy I'm going to mention is Jalen Daniels from Kansas, just because I wish he was bigger, because that dude's a fun football player. I love watching Kansas's offense. That some of it's out of necessity of how weird they have to get, but it's a very, very well-coached team and one that's really fun to watch, even if they don't have the best players. But he really makes them go, and he can make some real throws. And I actually have a draftable grade on him, a day three grade, but he's just a guy I want to watch this year just because I think he's just a fun football player, even if he might never get to those, you know, the next tiers that we're talking about some of these guys earlier in the show.
I think that sums up exactly why or how deep this class is, because he's my 25th senior.
25th,
not just overall quarterback, just senior, quarterback. But I understand why you like him. He did a lot of fun things for that Kansas offense last year. I think that, you know, he has a chance to, you know, when you do rankings this early, it's more like tiers, right? And so, like, there's a lot of room for fluctuation as we go on. But, no, I'm glad you brought him up. And Washington fans already hate me because I haven't been...
Oh, yeah, we haven't mentioned Penix.
Yeah, I haven't been sky high on their guys throughout the summer.
Yeah.
But, you know, I do want to mention Michael Penix real quick because he is a draftable quarterback. He's just not that slam dunk top 100 pick that, you know, a lot of people want to make him out to be. But, you know, and part of that's the injury stuff, right? At Indiana, he had a lot of injuries, had a really good year last year. He has the arm strength to sling the ball all over the field, throws a catchable ball. Mechanics are all over the place. He overstrides a lot.
Yes, that's the number one. He'll overstride like crazy, especially when he's throwing outside.
Yeah. And he'll make some throws every game that he knows he shouldn't make, but he still tries it. And, you know, he just kind of that YOLO stuff where I'm just going to see what happens. And so the ball placement and decisions just need to be more precise, more consistent if Penix is going to have an NFL career. But another guy who came back for his senior year, we'll see.
Another transfer.
Yeah, well, and he's got receivers there. So we'll see what that Washington offense should be a good one this year, really productive. And so Penix is a big part of that. So it'll be fun to watch him, see if what improvements he makes.
They're a fun team, and I even like the edge that they have.
Braylon Trice, yeah.
Trice, yep, Obi Trice. The one receiver, number one, is it Adunzi? Roman Adunzi?
Adunzi, yeah. And
Adunzi?
The other one is McMillan.
McMillan.
Yeah, they've got a couple guys on that offense.
In relation to Nate McMillan, a longtime Seattle
I don't think so, but I don't think it is.
It was the first thing I looked up. I was like, ooh, Washington McMillan, maybe, I don't think he was. I think he was from California or something.
Yeah.
But Adunzi, I actually don't have him as like a first round grade, but just getting ahead of myself. But I liked him because he has a power slot maybe down the road. Mm-hmm. He digs out some of those safeties. So that was like the one guy, but he's not maybe the sexiest player for a guy that's kind of gotten some hype. So I'm with you on it that I liked him, but maybe didn't love any of those Washington guys. And I'm with you on Penix. I thought some of his mechanics stuff was, like you mentioned, the overstriding. You see that all the time. The not listening to his feet, which is the no, yes throws, or the no, why'd you do that throws.
Right.
And for a guy that has so much experience, that's a little more worrisome than maybe a guy that only has 10 starts under his belt. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's where you have to kind of take all those kind of variables and put them in there. I look him as a day three guy. I like him, but just, you know, I'm right there with you, though, that I just couldn't get around on him, even if I wanted to. And I watched plenty of games of Washington because they have plenty of draftable guys.
And all the feedback I got from NFL people was third to fifth round. So yeah, it's not like we're just, you know, killing the kid here. Like that's how the NFL views him right now, where we are in August. The feedback was all in that third to fifth round range.
Great. Makes you feel better. Every once in a while, I just like, you see some of the public facing analysis and you're like, huh?
Yeah.
It's the Principal Skinner meme. Am I the one that's wrong?
Right.
am I out of touch? But no, Dane, this was a very fun inaugural episode. I guess at least this iteration of this version of Van Halen. This was a very, very fun episode. I'm so glad that we get to do this and we get to do this all year. Every week it'll be coming out on Wednesdays. It'll be back out next Wednesday. So be on the lookout for that. And Dane, thank you so much again for joining me. This is going to be a lot of fun this year. And yeah, I guess here we go. We're in training camp, baby. Your articles are out. We're about to get that first mock draft. Oh no, we had a too early mock draft.
But yeah, we got to get that first big board coming up. Yeah, top 50 coming up here in a few weeks. That'll be something that I put a lot of time into. Yeah,
that's always fun.
So no, this is great. This is gonna be a lot of fun as we kind of do this each week, and I'm eager to get your perspective, and it'd be fun, you know, prospects, pros, doing both of it on the show. It'll be fun.
It will be great. But no, thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you guys next time.
This was the Athletic Football Show's Prospects to Pros podcast.